This week, we explore the idea of death, as the National Treasure movies put it, the debt that all men pay. But is it more than just an end? What can we know about the topic of death when using the concept of following reason? What do we know about this great transformation? This week, we'll explore just that. Philosophical reason assisted with great quotes and poetic quips. Then, we'll move on and talk about the most misunderstood card in a tarot deck. We've got some news and a whole lot more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 594. I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. If you want to learn more about how you can assist the WCY podcast in bringing Masonic education that is trusted and unique and fires on all cylinders, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your various options. Other options that help support this show are also through the shop and our bookstore, as well as some of the things that we sell on Skull and Crown Limited. Now, there's a link for Skull and Crown right in the About section of our website. And, of course, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well if it interests you. It is all handmade quality leather goods that I make all by hand, a labor of love, as anything of quality usually is. In the news, there are still tickets left, very few as I understand it, to MasonicCon Kansas, which is happening on July 29th in Miriam, Kansas. The event starts on July 28th with a meet and greet at Overland Park Lodge, and from 8 to 9, a historical light live episode featuring, I'm guessing, a bunch of really cool stuff with speakers. Then the following day, you've got five unique and special speakers, plus the Master of Ceremonies, and a panel discussion. Now, the Master of Ceremonies, TBD, hasn't been announced yet, I should say, and the panel has not been announced yet, but your speakers are Jason Richards, Ryan Flynn, Matt Parker of Nebraska, Michael J. Stoops, past Grand Master, will be zooming in from Ireland, and the always great Brad Drew from Northern Kentucky. If you want to learn more about that, head on over to MasonicConKansas.com. While we're at it, Space Novum's MasonicCon Chicago is happening on September 16th, 2023. I'll be your host and MC for that event. We've got seven speakers. People are coming from all over the United States, from Lacey, Washington, all the way over to as far as Easton, Pennsylvania, and as far south as Naples, Florida. We've even got brothers coming in from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Canada, and a couple other places. If you would like to be the first to know, then head on over to MasonicConChicago.com and scroll down a little bit. Click on the mailing list. That's a mailing list that goes through Google Forms. I am the only person who sees it, so you don't have to worry about anybody selling your info. I'm the only person who gets it. We've got sponsorships available, too, from $150 at a bronze level to a $450 gold level. Various things come with those. Of course, you get access to the event and a table and all of that cool stuff. If you are a vendor and you want to be at MasonicCon Chicago, just send us an email, hit the contact button, let me know. We are not charging for vendors at all to be there. So that is excellent. We are also accepting donations for the swag bags. We're going to be having some really cool swag this year, and I'm very excited about it. And some of it is coming from brothers who own shops or lots of memorabilia, and will have one-off things inside of various swag bags. So it's a lot of fun. Now, of course, to get the swag, you got to have a VIP ticket. The VIP ticket is $120. General admission is $80. The tickets to MasonicCon Chicago are live right now. So you can head on over and click on one of the tickets, and you can just PayPal, buy your ticket that way. MasonicCon Chicago is 117 days, 15 hours, and 3 minutes away as of the time of recording this particular episode. So don't wait. Go get those tickets. We are selling them now, and we will be revealing speakers very soon. I can tell you that speakers are coming. from all over the United States with a little bit of local flair. We've got 4 flying in and 3 locals. It's going to be quite the event. I'm very excited about it. And I know Space Novum Lodge, the premier Masonic Education Lodge in the state of Illinois, is so excited to be hosting and being a great partner in this Masonic Education adventure. So again, head on over to MasonicCon Chicago for your Masonic Education fix coming up in September of this year. All right, the Masonic Education for this week comes from a unique article written by Brother N.W.J. Hayden. It's called Death, the Liberator, and it was published in February of 2003, on the 1st actually, and I was pretty excited to read this one. I think it's a wonderful piece, and I think you'll love it too. And of course, we'll have a link back to the original article where you can find it, Masonic Education, to resources, and a full exploration of all things Masonic. But here we go. Death, the Liberator. The specter of death looms large over every creative work of humanity. It is the great motivator, the unknown end against which we all strive for remembrance. But is it also our greatest liberator? In common with older mysteries, so far as we have relies on their teachings, Masonry offers its votaries a method of approach to its final test of our philosophy of life, one worthy of human dignity and in harmony with our honored motto, follow reason. Alan Seeger wrote for all of us, quote, "But I've a rendezvous with death at midnight in some flaming town, and I to my pledged word am true. I shall not fail that rendezvous." We too have a rendezvous with the Reaper by no means to be escaped, no matter how much science may help us postpone it. And though to but few is it given to meet him with those feelings voiced for us by Horatius, how can a man die better than when facing fearful odds, for the ashes of his fathers and the temples of his gods? Yet we need not watch his sure approach with only a bitter recognition of our human weakness. Such an attitude is unworthy of those who truly follow reason and have worked out a philosophy of life, which in death sees but a change of circumstance, however important that may be. We should adapt to our own use the salute offered by the gladiators of old, save that instead of hailing a human Caesar who viewed their struggles as an amusement, we should as bravely regard the Ancient of Days, saying each one of us, Ave Mauster Vitae, Mortuus, Te Saluto, and go forward fearing nothing. There have been many noble expressions of attitude towards death, and amongst them, that remarkable poem, Thanatopsis, written a century ago by a young man of 18, holds a high place with its sonorous phrases, its confidence that finds in facts a firm foundation of faith. Naturally, it reflects at first the somber New England upbringing of its author, but none surpass its conclusion in natural dignity. Quote, "Sustained and soothed by an unfaltering trust, approach thy grave, like one who wraps the drapery of his couch about him and lies down to pleasant dreams." End quote. Let us examine our grounds for this trust, that our hope may be reinforced by reason as concrete as by iron rods, and to this end, let me draw attention to an essay by Maeterlinck, to which I am deeply indebted, Death, published by Dodd, Mead and Company, 1912. He writes, quote, "It were a salutary thing for each of us to work out his idea of death in the light of his days, and the strength of his intelligence, and learn to stand by it. He would say to death, I know not who you are, or I would be your master, but in days when my eyes saw clearer than today, I learnt what you are not. That is enough to prevent you from becoming my master." He would thus carry, imprinted on his memory, a tried image against which the last agony would not prevail, and in which the phantom-stricken eyes would take fresh comfort. Instead of the terrible prayer of the dying, which is the prayer of the depths, he would say his own prayer, that of the peaks of his life, where would be gathered, like angels of peace, the most limpid, the most pellucid thoughts of his life. Is not that the prayer of prayers? After all, what is a true and worthy prayer, if not the most ardent and disinterested effort to reach and grasp the unknown? End quote. Here is the key to our problem. Let us learn what death is not. By this time-honored method, we shall strip off the masks wherewith our imagination has disguised it. It is not sickness, nor suffering, nor the stern agony. It is not shroud, nor pall, nor grave, nor the horrors of disintegration. All these have to do with the methods and usages of life, the errors and weaknesses of nature or science caused their beginnings. Death emphasizes their futility. Should we convalesce, we forget them. Should we not, our survivors abuse death that stops them. As Spencer so carefully explains, our life is a continual adjustment of internal relations to external relations, of growth from within to pressure from without. And when we can no longer adjust ourselves, why blame death for clearing the board and giving us a new deal? Do we accuse sleep for the fatigue which overwhelms us if we resist it? It seems that all our knowledge only helps us to die in greater pain than the animals that know nothing. And we add to our troubles by inputting to death those salvaging operations whereby our elements are restored to usefulness in life's workshop. Quote, earth that nourished thee shall claim thy growth to be resolved to earth again, and lost each human trace, surrendering up thine individual being, shalt thou go to mix forever with the elements. End quote. We do not view with horror or anguish the fading flower or the crumbling wall, but where our bodies are concerned, we usually strive to delay, by all means possible, their natural dissolution. Embalmings, coffins, graves, and vaults are brought into action, and that which happens therein positions our thoughts, offends our senses, daunts our courage. Yet all of this of life, and impossible without life. How much, then, has our boasted civilization increased the ethical value of our funeral ceremonies? Remains, then, but one terror associated with death, that of the unknown into which it seems to force us. But this also can be dissolved considerably, if not totally, by following reason. There are at least four methods of solution open to us. Total annihilation. Survival with our present consciousness. Survival without consciousness. Survival with universal consciousness. There is nothing to be gained by including any religious dicta herein, for the fact of death is no more and certainly no less subject to that mode of thought than any other of the activities of life. Birth is equally as important as death, but only in some pagan and uncivilized peoples do we, and the solemnity and dangers of birth, regard it as occasions for priestly action. So we have still much to learn. Annihilation is not only unthinkable, it is a blunder. Infinite change, yes, surely. Nothing of him that doth fade but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange. Endless diversity of place and condition. But to suppose non-existence is to try to limit infinity, and since a state of nothingness cannot be at all, that at all events it cannot make death terrible, as Sir Edwin Arnold has written. Quote, never the spirit was born, the spirit shall cease to be never. Never was time, it was not. End and beginnings are dreams. Birthless and deathless and endless endureth the spirit forever. Death hath not touched it at all, dead though the house of it seems. End quote. The next alternative, survival with our present consciousness, involves that ancient puzzle, what am I? For most of us, I becomes identified with memory. I cannot be body or mind, for we know that they are constant, only in changing. The body provides, and the mind organizes, our sense perceptions, whereas our conscious memory preserves such residue of these as established experience and built character. Memory seems to be a sheath for the eye, most easily disturbed by sickness, yet most clamorous for an unbroken existence. What cares it that through the alchemy of death, I can participate in the whole range of natural forces? Neither knowledge nor beauty nor power attract it, if they are not accessible through its agency. If I am greater than and within memory, then bodily sufferings and desires must be petty to this surviving consciousness, for with the loss of body, its services are lost too. Deprived of sense perception on which to build them, mental and moral pains, and changes must go, and the personal mind is dissolved. Remains, then, of our present consciousness only memory, so pitiably finite and cut loose from its former co-workers, how shall it continue to know itself? We know how easily it fades while in full physical health. What then will it be like when the great change comes? Yet the hope that this alternative conveys has done much good service to the brave souls of our predecessors, and is well expressed in the Song of Odysseus, as he lay awaiting death by torture. Quote, "Endure, my heart, not long shalt thou endure the shame, the smart. The good and the ill are done, the end is sure. Endure, my heart." There stand two golden vessels by the throne of Zeus on high. From them he scatters mirth and moan to men who die. And thou of many joys hast had thy share, thy perfect part, battle and love and evil things and fair. Endure, my heart. Fight one last greatest battle under shield, wage that war well, then join thy fellows in the shadowy fields of Asphodel. There is a kingly Hector, there the men who fought for Troy. Shall we not fight our battles o'er again? Were that not joy? Though no sun shines beyond the dusky west, thy perfect part, there shalt thou have the unbroken rest. Endure, my heart. Translated by Andrew Lang. We approach, then, our third alternative, survival without consciousness. This also contains nothing of terror or regret. Dreamless sleep we welcome as nature's sweet restorer, but not as a lasting condition. Such an expectation does not consort with ideals fit for ordinary healthy men and women, much less for builders. A little further analysis shows us that by this alternative we imply really the direct negative of our second alternative. Rather, we feel opening to our vision that which contains the awfully possible satisfaction for which all seem to be struggling. The only possible completion of that urge from within, which is the mainspring of our evolution. Quote, "Nay, but as when one layeth his worn-out robes away, and taking others saith, these will I wear today, so layeth off the spirit, lightly its garb of flesh, and passeth to inherit a residence afresh." End quote. Here, then, we approach our fourth alternative, survival with a universal consciousness. And at this point, Maeterlinck's own words alone are adequate. Quote, "Here begins the open sea. Here begins the glorious adventure. The only one abreast with human curiosity. The only one that soars as high as its highest longing. Let us accustom ourselves to regard death as a form of life which we do not yet understand. Let us learn to look upon it with the same eye that looks upon birth. As soon our mind will be accompanied to the steps of the tomb with the same glad expectations that greets a birth. If, before being born, we are permitted to choose between the great peace of non-existence and a life that should not be completed by the magnificent hour of death, which of us, knowing what we ought to know, would accept the disquieting problem of an existence that would not end in the reassuring mystery of its conclusion? Which of us would care to come into a world where there is so little to learn, if he did not know that he must enter it if he would leave it and learn more? The best part of life is that it prepares this hour for us, that it is the one and only road leading to the magic gateway, and into that incomparable mystery where misfortunes and sufferings will no longer be possible, because we shall have lost the body that produced them, where the worst that can befall us is the dreamless slumber which we count among the number of the greatest boons on earth, where lastly it is almost unimaginable that a thought can survive to mingle with the substance of a universe, that is to say, with infinity which, if it be not a waste of indifference, can be nothing but a sea of joy." End quote. It is to this that we, having followed reason, make our approach, sustained and soothed by an unfaltering trust. Heretofore, we have seen through a glass darkly the narrow limits of our being conceal infinity from our view, as Pascal has said. Or to use a Western idiom, we cannot see the forest for the trees. We must prepare ourselves in advance by learning how to change our focus. For example, when we look through a screen door, we see the garden through a faint blur of lines. Or we could instead see the screen filling our vision with a faint blur of light and greenery filtering through. For all of us, death is but a screen, and for most of us, fills our vision. Can we readjust our focus and strengthen our unfaltering trust by attempting to understand infinity? The effort, even if unsuccessful at present, will be as useful as those of our talented brother of Rochester, Mr. Claude Bragdon, in his illuminating books on the fourth dimension. As an analogy, let us consider the experience of the human embryo. When the time of birth approaches, how limited is its experience of life? A little space and power for movement, but in no other mode can its volition express itself. Sight, hearing, choice of food, protection from accidents are all beyond its power. It knows nothing but a soft, warm darkness, and even these qualities are not so known to its consciousness, for it has no basis of comparison with anything different. Could one communicate to it news of the great change soon to take place in its condition? With what terror and reluctance would it regard this entire loss of all it knows for a state of being so much more comprehensive as to be incomprehensible? Yet we adults are in the same position as we approach the gateway to another life. And if we know the embryo, by virtue of its inherent life quality, can change from a speck of zooplasm to a human being, there appears no reason at all why it should not go on yet further and enter into tune with the infinite. Death to us can be no worse than birth to the embryo, and all evolution affirms that, the souls ephemerally housed in nature's depths. What then is this infinite, as our reason tests it, that is to say, as we compare it with life as we know it? Mostly negatives. It has neither beginning nor end. It can have no purpose nor destination, for the one would have been accomplished and the other reached in a long train of ages that has passed. Had it been other than self-contained, if it be not conscious always, then it never will be, for it must know all or nothing, since it has only itself to know. If, however, we try to understand infinity through our senses, how different is the result? At once the hard diamond becomes a mass of activities. Every part is going somewhere. Complete knowledge is endlessly experimenting for new discoveries. Accomplished purpose seeks continually some new fulfillment. Which is right? Is the inconsistency real or only apparent? Here our limits force us to change from operative to speculative. We are, for the most part, unable to attain exact knowledge in advance of the fact, but we can hope, for we have laid the foundation thereof. We cannot deny infinity, but we can see that all its parts, for lack of a better word, must be of the same nature. There would then be, as yet, no unchangeable finality of perfected knowledge or accomplished purpose. Rather, an infinite series of transformations and combinations and an ever-growing consciousness, striving to know itself, seeking to express an idea hidden in its own nature, requiring all the worlds of the universe as fields for its experiments, all form of life as instruments, as co-workers to that discovery, as pioneers in that great adventure. Here is our hope. Quote, "Small as man and his thought may appear, he is exactly the value of the most enormous forces that he is able to conceive, since there is neither great nor small in the immeasurable. The mind alone perhaps occupies in infinity a space which comparisons do not reduce to nothing." End quote. Is it not then childish to talk of eternal happiness or sorrow where it is infinity that is in question? Our ideas of these conditions are so human, so specialized, they are based so entirely on the implication that the laws of our life here shall govern our life under all other conditions. Yet we must admit that our ideas proceed entirely from the sensibilities of our nervous system, which is turned to but a small range of perceptions, and which could as easily have felt everything the reverse way, and taken pleasure in what now makes pain. Much wiser, then, is it to follow reason, and recognize that it would need but a trifle, a few papillae more or less to our skin, the least modification of our eyes and ears to turn the temperature, the silence, and the darkness of space into a delicious springtime, an unequaled music, a divine light. We can then readily persuade ourselves that the catastrophes we think we behold are the acts of life itself, that even the collision and pulverizing of worlds marks the beginning of some new and marvelous experiment, that all is but birth and rebirth, a departure into an unknown filled with the anticipation of that far-off divine event to which the whole creation moves. Some immense festivals of mind and matter in which death, the liberator, thrusting aside at last our two enemies, time and space will soon permit us to take our proper part as fellows of the craft, of which the great architect is the master. Well, there you have Death, the Liberator. I rather enjoyed this. It does speak to death in the same way that I personally view it, as a change, the thing that leads to the great next place. If you are a fan of Indiana Jones, then maybe you remember that famous line by Ohan, the old friend, who said something along the lines of, "The last great adventure, I go first, Indy." And of course he dies. Two things that stick out about this article for me are the ideas that we place on the ideas of whatever comes next. We base this on our current understanding of how we are, live, and exist within this reality. The second thing that jump out to me is this wonderful idea of a fear that the embryo might feel being born might be the same as the fear that we feel as we move toward the next change. As humans, it is something we all have to confront. It is the thing that gives life its quote-unquote meaning in a special sort of way. Without death, accomplishments are not limited. Lives are not limited. Perhaps nothing is as special. It is, I suppose, the necessary exit from this world to the next, which might keep all things in balance here. Next up, I wanted to discuss a little thing about the tarot. Recently, I received my awesome package from the Brink Literacy Project. To learn more about what they do, please head on over to brinklit.org. One of the projects they recently did was a Kickstarter a couple of years ago where they worked with some awesome artists and authors to create a tarot deck where each individual card reflected some classic scene from some classic book. And I fell in love with this. I backed it at a retailer level, which means I got 5 of these box sets with 5 lapel pins, one for each set. And 2 of them are spoken for. One is mine, and I'm giving one away as a gift. And I've got 3 left, and I'm hoping that we're going to do a sort of giveaway or a contest here at the WCY podcast to get those. Even if you're not into tarot, I think the artwork is exquisite. I think they're just really an amazing set of cards that you can't get it anywhere else unless you're super lucky. So that's coming up in the future. As far as tarot this week, I thought rather than do a random tarot card draw to pull a card, understand the scenario, and then try to discern how that one thing might apply to our lives, either Masonically or not, rather than do that, I would love to instead just talk about one card, and that's the card called Death. I think it is so interesting, the miseducation that happens with the tarot as something, as this divinatory tool that's used to contact spirits or open doorways or all this other nonsense, really. Anybody who has a deck of playing cards, you own a tarot deck. That's where it comes from. It is a spawn of this. It was a game. It was a game first and foremost, and later on, scenarios and attributes were added to the cards. Probably the most work on this comes from Pamela Coleman Smith, a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, who did work with Arthur Edward Waite, a Mason who was, in his own right, prolific, but perhaps not the greatest advocate of any specific thing unless he was the progenitor of it. Now, the Death card in particular, I think a lot of people get really freaked out by this card, and also the Tower card, but I want to talk about the Death card. First, let's start with, tarot has nothing to do with Freemasonry, that's my disclaimer. Tarot is something I'm interested in. I've been a student of for many years on the occult side of things. I use it daily. And it's okay if you're not into it. Again, it is not Masonic. But it is a cognitive tool, a set of tools and scenarios to look at your life through different lenses and be contemplative about those things. We do the same thing with the 24-inch gauge, with the trowel, the plum, the level, all of these things. We do the same thing. We think about how our life scenarios react through these different cognizant tools that are analogous to real working tools. But the death card in particular, so many people think like, oh man, I got the death card, I'm going to die, somebody I know is going to die. And in reality, if somebody does die, that's likely a coincidence. The death card is really not about death. Rather, it's about the rising sun. You'll notice on the death card, if appropriately rendered in its artwork, shows the messenger of death. A skeleton riding the white horse. It represents this idea of the end of something. But the key element here is this bright light in the background, the rising sun, which is indicative of the next great thing that's coming, the next opportunity, the thing that is going to change, thing that will be your new focus. So when you get this card, again, it's really the most feared, and nobody really gets this card if you're not a real tarot person, I guess. This is a card that represents the end of some phase of your life. Some portion of your life that was either good, bad, indifferent. It's really symbolizing the end of that and the beginning of something glorious up on the horizon. Sometimes it's sudden. Maybe it might be related to a revelation you've had and a change of direction, you know, indicative maybe of the Tower card preceding the Death card. But this is really a card that says, hey, there's a new road that's going to be approaching you. New things are coming. Be ready to see them. Look for the rising sun and the new opportunity. If you got the Death card today, what's something in your life that's winding down? And what does the sun represent for you? What new opportunity? Are you moving into a new position in Lodge? Is something coming to an end there? Have you gotten a new opportunity at work where one project is slowing down and it's time to hand it off and you have to pick up a brand new project? What could it be? It's important to look at those things with enthusiasm because, as we know, change is constant and we should be enthusiastic about change. That's it for this week. One more time, I want to thank the producers, fellows, contributors of the program. If you'd like to support the show, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and become a contributor, fellow producer, or even a legacy partner and direct an episode of your choice once a year. It's pretty cool. We've got the shop with limited edition items as well as our bookstore with Amazon affiliate links through all of those. You can even get a tarot reading. WCYpodcast.com, click on tarot, just some guided readings. In any case, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your...